Well, I want to speak about that Exodus passage that Lynn brought us this morning. The great value of the book of Exodus, it's Greek for way out. It's literally a way out book. And just coming in to look at Exodus, it's a book that, and when I read it, it anticipates often what churches experience. You read Exodus and you see church stuff happening. People traveling with a leader under God. It's a particular kind of dynamic. It's a textbook of the pitfalls, the triumphs, the tragedies that happen when you have God, a group of people, and an appointed leader trying to make progress together. Page after page of working examples. It's the story of a man who has met with God, who is commissioned to take a tribal clan of slaves on a transforming adventure to a new place, to a new homeland. A place they've only ever heard about. Now, slaves have some attitudes that are noted, can be recognized, and they're all through the story. Slaves typically only know leadership as boss man dominance. You, take this, go there. Work until I say stop. They're not used to making decisions. Slaves are not used to taking responsibility. They're not used to doing the risk assessment business. They're not used to adventure. You've got to understand this. This people that Moses starts walking with have this mindset. Life is regular. You eat, you work, you rest. The next day, you eat, you work, you rest. And before the Lord instituted the Sabbath, that was every day. You eat, you work, you rest. Unless the Pharaoh had a birthday or something like that. Archaeology has thrown some light on this. Archaeology is fantastic. The Middle East is just throwing up so many insights into what was going on here. But the worker dwellings around the pyramids, where people like this lived and worked, have shown that, A, these people had simple homes, but they were well fed. The dietary evidence is they lived well. Egypt was full of food. The Nile provided protein, and it's old terms, but 3 miles either way of the Isle of the Nile, there was farming. So Egypt was rich in food, and life was lived around these building sites, fixed. This is where you are. This is you live next to your work. We feed you. But they didn't know anything about roaming or adventuring or going somewhere else. So there's something here to consider. This is not what I'm going to talk about today, but spiritually, at times, I sense even in this place of prosperity and freedom, supposed freedom, some people have a slave mentality. That these features that the people of Israel had, that slave mindset, I eat, I work, I rest, I stay away from risk, I avoid adventure, I don't roam. That's about, even in our modern prosperous world, no chains around the ankles or physical limitations, but chains around the mind, slave mentality. But that's not where I'm going today. Slaves just stay in the comfort zone, do what they have to do, and don't go beyond. I want to pick up last week's reading. I listened to the recording of last week's service, and as I was listening to it, the last line of last week's Old Testament passage just jumped up at me. And we were in Exodus chapter 14, verse 31 last week. And it was the day that Israel celebrates, that the day that they were rescued from the military might of Egypt. So they were in a place where they expected in the next few hours to become mincemeat, to put it in graphic terms. Chariots, horses, spears, swords were about to rain down on them because they had had the audacity to run away as slaves. And it happened at a place that in Hebrew is known as Yam Sup. We know this in English, translated variously as the Red Sea or the Reed Sea. There's a lot of discussion about how deep the water was and where this was. You can research that apart. I'm not going to go there. But at the end of this great day, at the end of this great day, when the people of Israel looked out, they were on their feet, they were alive, and around them they saw the remnants of Pharaoh's chariots and his charioteers and his military might. And in modern terms, you might see, you know, after a tank battle, burnt out tanks, smoke, death. They knew they'd been rescued. How come? How had this happened? And we read in verse 31. And I described this as a good day in Exodus, a good day in the book of Exodus. Israel saw the great work that the Lord did among the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord and believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. This is my springboard for what I want to say today. This great day where at the end of this day, having seen God's salvation, the people of Israel got it together. They connected the dots. They were in a sound mind. They recognized they'd been saved. God had acted to save them. And so three things were aligned in their hearts and minds. One, they feared the Lord. God is real. He acts in history. He's big. Number two, they trusted this God. Not only feared him in the sense of, oh yeah, yeah, don't mess with the big I am. No, trust the big I am. Trust the Lord. And thirdly, they trusted, they believed in the Lord's servant, Moses. Moshe. A good day in Exodus. And that would be a good day in church too, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be great if you could say about a church, they feared the Lord, they trusted the Lord, and they trusted those who served the Lord in that place. Good day. Take God seriously, trust God, trust those who serve and lead as servants of God. So what do you think? Do you think that was a good day? Would that be a good day in church land? Well, this means yes, that means no. That means, oh, where's he taking us? Okay. The trick is to keep these elements in priority, clear and separate. Now we come to a not so good day in the book of Exodus. Today's reading, chapter 16, just two chapters on, not such a good day. And it begins from verse 2, as Lynn read it, the whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Moan, groan, boo, hiss, terrible. What changed between chapter 14 and chapter 16? They were hungry. Hunger does things. They had changed their consideration. Instead of fearing the Lord, trusting the Lord, and trusting Moses, his servant, they had just started complaining against Moses and Aaron. When the going gets tough, complain direct to local management. What happened to the fear of the Lord and the trust in the Lord? My answer is in two parts. The Lord and Moses had been disconnected, disassociated. Moses was no longer the Lord's servant, and his performance review was not very good. They were just looking at Moses and Aaron. God was totally out of their heads, you know. What had happened at the Red Sea or the Yam Sup or what had happened when they left Egypt was all forgotten. It was now just Moses, we're hungry, moan. And the second thing is that the Lord is no longer trusted or feared. He's effectively, as I've said, out of consideration. Where's God in this? Oh, didn't even think about that. Can you see that? That's how fear tends to work. Fear knocks out faith, and it does it psychologically by taking us from a very big view to a sort of a little tight perspective. And all you see is Moses. So, when the awareness of God, when the attention and the focus on the Lord should have been strong in a time of need and hardship, exactly when people should have been calling out to God, their provider, and praying for their daily bread, all the focus goes to Moses and Aaron, and they complain and they moan and they groan to the point where Moses feels unsafe. These people are becoming a mob. I'm in trouble. A full-scale pity party is raging. But God is gracious and begins remedial work. These people are in a bad place. They have forgotten about the Lord, and the Lord speaks to Moses about what he's going to do about it, to reorientate the people to the fear and the trust of the Lord, with Moses simply being the local servant leader under God. So I'll reread it from verse 4 onwards, but hear it in that sense that this is the Lord addressing the situation. He doesn't punish the people. He recognizes their weakness and their need for help to get them out of this tiny little focused complaint mentality. So the Lord said to Moses in verse 4, I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. In that way, I will test them, whether they will follow my instructions or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days. So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, in the evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Okay, this is the remedial work. People, you've started to think I'm the one shaping reality here. No, understand, it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us? And Moses said, when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining that you utter against him. Again, what are we, Aaron and I? Because your complaining is not against us, but it's against the Lord. It's this whole business of relating God to our circumstances, even though people are involved. But the lion's share of your attention must always be to the Lord. So when you complain, this is me talking now, okay, Moses and Aaron are easy targets, but your issue is with the Lord. Take it up with the Lord and not just his servants. So, application. I have seen a lot of this in church land. This is people stuff. This is God, people, leadership, trying to get somewhere together. That's why these stories resonate. There is unhappiness, and some or many people will always complain about the leader. Now, if you step out of church, what is politics? What is the news, however you receive it? People assessing the leadership. Shall we comply with what regulations they give us, or shall we protest? And are they doing well? Are they not doing well? It's the stuff that fills the air with chatter. So I can fully understand this business of, if you're unhappy, look at the leadership in terms of a political party or a secular government. I can even understand this in a tennis club. I can understand this in an orchestra or a football team. But here's the thing. Exodus tells us, it brings us into this story that we are not just a political party, we are not a tennis club, we are not just a band of musicians, we are a people moving with God and assisted by that he appoints and anoints, his servants. So in a church among the people of God, the leader or leadership does need to be carefully looked at. Dutch people can exercise their critical skills. That's okay. Do that. But in terms of importance, your two-legged leader will always be way behind the Lord. You need to be thinking not just what is the leadership saying, what is the Lord doing? What has he done? What has he said? What does he require of us in this context? Those are the big things to think about. They're far more important than the reality of what the local leadership may be saying or doing or not saying or doing. Because it is the Lord who sustains and feeds us. Moses didn't make the bread. Moses didn't bring the quails. It's the Lord. And so this whole exercise was about getting up from the pity party, from the complaining, to recognize that, the Lord is with us, and he does respond to our needs. And he is worthy of our best attention. I mean, after all, how do you confuse the creator, sustainer, and judge of all creation with local management? How can you get that so mixed up? That's what fear and hunger do. So when Israel fell to complaining because the food ran out, they turned their backs on God. The Lord had to get them back looking at him again as provider and protector. Now, I could say much more about this from my experience. Unhappy people in church land will complain and complain. And who better to complain about than the pastor? Or if they're really desperate, the pastor's wife. Or if it gets really sad, the pastor's kids. Now, I'm not referencing that to Trinity Church. That's just stuff that happens in churches. You may ask yourself, have I ever come across that? Well, it's there. What I want to suggest that we apply is as follows. If you are unhappy about something, and there are times when we're unhappy about something. Something in church is not to our liking. Be rest assured, there's no commandment that you must be happy with everything. It's okay to be unhappy about something. But here is what to do. First thing, it's a God issue. It's a God issue. It's God's church. You're God's child. He's taking you somewhere. So before you complain or you talk to someone else about it and get someone else unhappy, pray. First thing, pray. Seek the Lord in and through what you're facing. Where are you, Lord, in my unhappiness? Now, you may know this, but the Psalms are full of this. One third of the Psalms are laments. God, life's tough. Where are you? How come it's so painful? So if you can't find words, the Psalms are full of examples. So in your unhappiness, in your difficulty, pray. Go there first. Secondly, place your trust in Him. O Lord, in you I trust. O my God, to you I lift my soul. Do not let me be ashamed. That's Psalm 25. Have that conversation. Where are you, Lord? I want to trust you. And again, the laments do this again and again. The typical laments in the psalm, the first half is where are you? Why is it so difficult? These are my circumstances. The second half is, but in you I will trust. Because I've seen what you've done before. Now, can you see, this is a great adventure in faith. This is a wonderful opportunity for really growing. But if you just sit there and moan about, I don't know, the pastor or the church money, or it goes nowhere fast. So, number one, pray to God. Where are you? Number two, place your trust in Him. Number three, pray for those who serve in God's house as unto the Lord. And I'm basing this on that passage in Exodus 14:31, that good day in Exodus. And then you may think, now what was that complaint again? Because you will see it and feel about it quite differently. You've put it in a place, you've given it a reference, perspective. Now, I have one very simple application in mind, and I'm preaching with purpose here. Within the next year, you may well have a new pastor. And within that time, you may have one or two interim pastors. Okay. You will notice quite quickly you will notice that these pastors are different from me. You will even notice they are different from other pastors you have experienced in your life. In some way, they're different. Their way of leading may be quite different, their style of communication, the way they leave you feeling, the list goes on and on. And it's typically about what you expect and what you experience. There's a gap between the two. And that's the fertile ground for either they're wonderful or complain. This is people stuff. Now, here's the thing. No pastor moves to a new church to do anything less than their best. Pastors are really motivated people, right across the board. No one goes somewhere to make people's life miserable. But often pastors do not scratch where you itch. And that's just how it is. Maybe scratch somewhere, but not scratch elsewhere. They may make mistakes. And then it gets complicated because in a typical church, and we are not a typical church because we're an international church, but when there's a change of pastor, 10% of the congregation leave for some reason. And at the same time, in the grace of God, another 10% arrive. It's a funny thing. But it's churn. And it means there's change. Because those lovely people that you knew, well, where are they? I don't know. Maybe they're unhappy. Let's complain. That game's been played here. And then the new people arrive. Well, who are they? I don't know. And anxiety builds. Don't go there. Don't go there. Whenever you feel uneasy or you're not getting scratched where you itch, or you recognize that something isn't what it could be, make the Lord your go-to. Go to the Lord first. Because we fear him, we trust him. Muzzle the complaint muscle until you have prayed and sought the Lord on how to understand your experience. That's that. If I could just drop that with you. So when there's a bump, when there's a dissatisfaction, when there's a complaint, muzzle this muscle, pray. And then come back to it. Do dip into Exodus. It's page after page of this sort of experience and wisdom that you might recognize as part of a church life. A bunch of slaves being taken out on an adventure to become the people of God. Isn't that us? Amen.